In which case, why do so many from Syria undertake such a long, expensive and arduous, even potentially lethal journey to Europe, when they could perhaps head to refuge closer to home in rich Gulf states? None of those states are signatories to the UN Convention on Refugees, but under what obligation might they feel a need to help? We'll be speaking to Rima, a Syrian living and working in the UK. I should say Rima is not her real name. She's asked us, though, to withhold her identity in order to protect her family in Syria. First, though, you'll hear from Amira Fatala from the BBC Monitoring Service, who's been looking into this issue.
The Gulf states, and indeed most Arab states, require Syrians to apply for a tourist visa or a work permit before they can be let into the country. So even though they're coming from the same region, it can be quite difficult for them, particularly that in reality, the situation appears that it's quite rare for Syrians to be granted these visas at all.
Right. And can they just turn up and say, we don't have papers, or we do have papers, but we don't have a visa. However, we are claiming asylum.
This is Rima here. It's very important to stress on this point that in Arab countries, we don't have this refugee system. It's unlike Europe. And also unlike the European Union, we don't have this free of movement. So if you are there, let's say that you are in one of the Gulf countries and you already have a work visa or like a tourist visa and say that it's finished. So you stay there, but you have no right to do anything. One of my friends described the situation of her friend's mother in Egypt as like she's kind of imprisoned, like she can do nothing because her visa is not valid anymore. If she leaves that country, she cannot go back at all.
Just to be clear then, so is there any provision in these Gulf countries or Middle Eastern countries generally for the acceptance of refugees?
There doesn't appear to be any provision, particularly in terms of infrastructure, for example, or procedures. So these actually Gulf countries have quite a tradition of sponsoring development and charity funds, but this is always relating to work happening outside of their countries. So the UAE has, for example, helped with funding refugee camps in other countries, or Kuwait has got a very big charity development fund, but it never relates to hosting people who might be suffering from crises in the world in their own countries.
How much pressure, Amira, is there from what you've gleaned either on social media or in newspapers that there be more of an effort to host refugees in the Gulf countries?
There absolutely is a push on social media and even in traditional media with people questioning why the Gulf isn't sort of sharing the responsibility. And people are using an Arabic hashtag on Twitter, you know, hosting Syria's refugees is a Gulf duty, to express this. They're using this hashtag to post some very powerful images of Syrians fleeing the conflict, people who've died at sea, for example, and children. To, you know, escalate these calls for Syrians to be hosted in Arab and indeed Gulf countries.
Is there any precedent for Gulf countries taking in refugees on a sort of decent scale?
No, not that I can recall. And as you know, it is a crisis-ridden region.
Perhaps,
Rima.
I think the only thing is that those Syrians who are already in Gulf countries, for example, in Saudi, who are there and their visas, it's not valid anymore. They don't have a sponsor, for example, because Syrians, when they work in the Gulf, they need a sponsor. They have now this exception of renewing their visas so they can stay there.
Rima, tell me about your case. Why did you decide? I mean, you lived in Damascus until when? Was it 2013?
Correct. I was selected by a scholarship and I came to UK to study, and I never had in mind that I will stay here. I was working, and so that's why I'm saying, like, I am a different exceptional case, while the majority of Syrians are in a very, very bad situation. So,
have you got refugee status now?
No, I am working here. I managed to get sponsored and I'm on work visa here.
That presumably could end at some point.
It could.
In which case would you consider applying to be a refugee?
Well, It's a very emotional thing. First of all, because you are giving the passport of your country, you submit it and you lose it. Many, many, many Syrians who come here, even like legally, to study, to work, are horrified of the idea of going to the asylum center.
Because that is because the hope is, presumably, that at some point you can return to a country which isn't ravaged by war.
Of course, it's because it's your homeland. And there is a very important point, which is you are not here willingly. Like, you come to study here, but it's against your will not to go back home. Anyone can go back home, but like, if you could imagine of the life conditions, of what kind of threats are there, they are unbelievable. People watch it on the TV, but people are living it.
Do you still have members of your family?
I do have members in my family. I do have some friends. It's horrible. Like, it's not nightmare. It's even worse. Here I want to stress on something. Old people don't want to leave their houses, their neighborhoods, their places, but they push their daughters and sons to stay outside. For me, I was supposed to go back home 1 year after I finished, and that was the plan. But my parents were those who were pushing me, like, to try to find a job, try to find, again, a future, a stable life.
Rima, what do you make of the way in which the debate is being handled inside Europe by European governments over what to do with the hundreds of thousands of would-be refugees, many of them from Syria?
I think this is one of the basics of the human rights, isn't it? To live. Now, when we talk about Europe, people really welcomed this recent, unexpected change in the German policy. This, I would say, generosity, it gives like really good feelings, like we are welcome.
That was Rima, and I was also talking to Amira Fatala from BBC Monitoring.